Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, how are you doing? Welcome to a brand new series of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. It's series 10. I know series 9 literally just finished, but this is a new series and a new world. It's with Armando Iannucci. It's really good. I hope you enjoy it. If you do enjoy these, then if you live in London or can get to London on Monday nights, why not come and see some of them being recorded? We've got some great guests coming up on the 17th of October. We've got Chris Addison. That's Chris Addison, not Chris Addison, from The Thick of It and lots of other stuff. Fantastic stand-up comedian. We did have a very exciting American comedian lined up, but he has dropped out, so there'll be another guest as well. The 24th is two mystery guests. The 31st of October is a very exciting guest. I think I've confirmed, and I can't say yet, but I would advise you to buy tickets for that because that will sell out when I announce it. There's people including Lucy Porter, David Baddiel, Sarah Millican, all coming up this series, and hopefully lots more, still in the process of booking it. Go to leicestersquaretheatre.com if you want to buy tickets to that, or As It Occurs to Me. There's another As It Occurs to Me on the 16th of October, they're monthly. Do come along. Plenty of tickets remaining. Let's sit back and relax and enjoy Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has a sexually transmitted disease. It's Richard Herring! Hello, hello! Yes, thank you! Welcome. Welcome to Series 10. Count them. Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Or I was down at the Junior Gazette the other day. There's a guy there called Colin. He's really cool. He called it rehearsal to us. I don't know if that's going to catch on. I do have a sexually transmitted disease. Well, in a way, I've caught a virus off my daughter, who I created with sex. That's what they don't warn you about. They're the worst. Because it's an ongoing... Once you've got a baby, there's just disease for the next 10 years. It's just awful. So whatever they get, you get. It's really horrible. Thank God I only record one of these a week, because the idea of having to talk to two people tonight would be... I mean, the second one.
Yes, thank you very much. If you donated to the Kickstarter, we've paid both for Series 9 and Series 10, which is lucky because we'd already done Series 9. So if we hadn't got the money for that, we would have been fucked. Thank you so much. It's really great that you want to support it in that way. I'll talk about that in the second one. I've forgotten to bring something on. There will be a mention of we've got some product placement. It's kind of hidden behind this chair at the moment. But so we're away. That's one of the Kickstarter rewards. It feels like ages since we did these, but the news is all the same. Brexit's still happening, apparently. There's been no bad effects of Brexit yet, though, so that's good, isn't it? Because it hasn't happened yet! We're still in the EU! Stay in! Stay in! Democracy has kind of self-imploded and punched... Everyone's sort of voting to punch themselves in their face and then say, yeah, we won! That means we can never do anything we want ever again. We're interested to see what happens in America with Donald Trump. I'm very excited about that one. I've kind of got to the point where I kind of want him to win. Don't you? I think that's... Come on, it's going to be fucking awesome. We're all dead anyway. We're all going to die anyway, so we might as well go out with him. I'm very obsessed with CJ from Eggheads. I can't get over. I talked about it on the bonus podcast I did, but he's been arrested for his imaginary crime. I don't know what the... It's a terrifying thing to be made, you know, make up a crime and then have to go to prison. You'll have to go to imaginary prison and... I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. We have a Dutchman in later who can talk about whether he's ever saw CJ stalking the canals. See if I know if he was ever pushed in. Apparently 12 more, but in the year CJ from Eggheads was in Amsterdam, 12 more people than usual died in canals. I'm no mathematician, but that must... Right, we're going to crack straight on because we've got a fantastic first guest. This guest just made me think, oh, what the fuck have I done with my life? Why? It's a real way to make you think, fuck yeah, I've really wasted the last 20 years, because he really hasn't. You'll know him best. He was the former classical music columnist for Gramophone magazine. That is why there's a lot of Gramophone. A Gramophone magazine subscribers in tonight wondering why he isn't doing that anymore. Well, we're going to find out. Will you please welcome Armando Iannucci, ladies and gentlemen? There he is. Welcome. Sit down. He's drinking beer. Sit down, there's a microphone there.
All right, thank you.
Good.
I didn't know whether to touch you or not.
Well, you've been in a little room backstage with me, so you've already you've got whatever I've got.
I know it will go out on the internet as well.
It'd be good if it goes online with this virus. It's not too bad. You must have had... You've got three children?
Three children, yes.
So you've been through all this three times?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Vomiting. Yeah. The works. Yeah. Every orifice.
Vomiting out of every orifice.
Vomiting out of every orifice. And that's just the children.
It is. It isn't just the children because it's also us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's the thing. No, so why... So why haven't they worked out that it's kids that incubate these things and yet adults get it?
Yeah.
And yet, I don't know. I'm sure there's some... this isn't going anywhere.
No, it isn't. No. It must be. We should have had it all.
No.
But the new children create new diseases that we didn't have.
Perhaps
that's the beauty of...
Perhaps today's newly announced Nobel Prize winner for medicine can come up with an answer. Because
I think if I should win the Nobel Prize for something, is someone who can make quite hot microwave food instantaneously warm enough for a child to eat without burning their mouth. That would be... That's the invention I want to have.
Right.
Because you've got to wait and then... Do a lot of that.
Yeah. Or say, could you just not... Oh, no, that wouldn't work. I was going to say, could you just not put it on so much? But but then that defeats the point of microwaving, doesn't it?
They could suck it out of the freezer. Just suck it until it's...
Yeah. Just, here's a chicken lolly.
It is. What happened to the old Gramophone magazine?
The old Gramophone magazine.
There?
Well, it was something I did just on my sort of day off.
Yeah.
I know what happened. I used to write one of these. It was once a month. I used to write a column for Gramophone magazine on classical music. But then I did a film called In the Loop, and it just took up a lot of time. And the edit afterwards took a lot of that. And I had to stop doing lots of things just to kind of concentrate on...
Is Gramophone magazine still going?
Yes, it is. Yes.
They should change their name to something. that people can actually still listen to.
Do you know, they've thought about it and they've thought, no. I tell you something, though. The other reason I stopped was the classical music fraternity. It's just the worst bunch of cunts I've ever come across. Once a year, I'd get invited to the gramophone Christmas party, and I thought, well, I'd go along. And it was worse than you could, because it was full of, like, obscure academic classical music critics who all hate each other and all assumed that you share their hatred for that other person. You know, it was really worse than any sort of sub-college politicking. It was horrible. Yeah. And I'd always leave these gramophone magazine classical music Christmas party drinks just feeling just unclean and dirty and disgusted with myself, really, for the world I'd got myself into, you know. So that was another reason.
Was it of this, like, so a lot of comedians get into drugs and hookers.
I slid desperately into the dark world of appalling music critics.
But you've always liked classical music.
I have, since you were young.
And everything.
Yeah, so. I don't know whether it's a reaction. You know, I used to share a room with my brother who was into Lou Reed and David Bowie and Rolling Stones and all that. And I think you just react. This is the way I explain it. You kind of react against what's been foresaid. And so I just thought, well, this is fine, but it didn't feel like me. And for some reason, I just remember it. Some music lesson at school. Teacher put on a piece of, I think it was The Planets or something like that, and I just thought, oh, I like that sound. I want to hear more of that, and I just got more and more enthusiastic about it.
You must be the only school kid who listened to Planets and wasn't laughing at Uranus when that came up. I love this. This is fantastic.
Yeah, they all sing in Uranus. It's a chorus of female voices at the end of Uranus.
Right.
Yeah.
I must dig it out and have a listen.
I can make a joke about classical music as well. You know, I'm not hung up about it.
Who is the best at classical music?
Who's the best at classical music? Yeah. The best at classical music is probably Daniel Barenboim.
Oh yeah.
Because he can play the piano and he conducts an orchestra.
Right. Can he write it, though? Does he write ones of stuff as well? It's harder to write it than play it, isn't it?
I don't know. Ask Mr. Barenboim.
I'm going to get him on next week.
I think
he'll be disappointed he came. I don't really. It's going to be, are you the best at classical music?
He'll be full of bitter remarks about other conductors and that party that he has to go to every Christmas. The conductor's party that he has to go to.
So we'll talk about something that people... What about the... I think people would be more interested in the pot noodle advert you did with Peter Bainham. I was hoping to get... Peter's in the country on and off at the moment. I was really hoping to get him on for the last 50 minutes
of this. We could have recreated it.
Talk about how you put it... We nearly had him on in the last series because he was in and out of the country. Mm. And I watched them all again.
You make him sound like some kind of... like he's on the run.
Maybe he is. He's changed a lot, hasn't he? Just a different kind of man now. He's in LA. Doesn't eat chicken lollies anymore.
No. Yes.
What do you remember about the two good? Did you write it and direct it?
We devised it together. They came up with this brief, which was I'm trying to remember now. It's such a long time ago.
As if you don't read it every night and laugh at your hilarious. Too gorgeous.
Yeah.
He said too gorgeous.
That's right.
Really funny.
The advertising agency were told by Portnoy we'd like to kind of get across the fact that they're actually healthier than people think they are. And the ad agency thought, well, no one's going to believe that. So why don't we come up with a mock campaign that Portnoy are saying how healthy they are and then have this character, Peter Bainham, trying to subvert it by saying, no, they're not, they're really bad for you. And I'm very proud of the fact that we did get out on Christmas Day an advert where it says, Port Noodle, they're really bad for you. But only went out once, and then I think somebody made a phone call and it was taken off.
When you're not allowed to say, wasn't there a thing saying, that what's all this about? You weren't allowed to say Pot Noodle is nutritious because the advertising standards came back and said, it is nutritious.
Yeah, and there were things you couldn't say, like you couldn't have a go at broccoli. because the broccoli marketing board were, you know, were very powerful.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you couldn't, it was like attacking another brand in a way. So
yeah.
You can do, so we had to say things like, you know, leaves and green leaves and things like that. But you just think, well, you make an advantage of your limit, of what you, what the limitations are, sure. And you just play about with that, really. Yeah. You know.
You did work on quite a lot of adverts. You did the post office one.
Post office one with Bill Oddie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was
and
he?
Bill Oddie and Westlife. not the same. No, Bill Oddie, we had to have Bill Oddie in, what do you call it, a hide, and then like 500 ducks all suddenly had to appear, right? In another one, Westlife, we just had to get them to say things, but after every take, Westlife would just separate, go off in like four or five different directions and have their makeup and then come back again. And it was literally easier to herd 500 ducks than Westlife.
Was Bill Oddie good to work with?
He was good. He was very jolly. Okay. He was good, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to go. I don't know if all the goodies are still with us.
Yes.
I'd quite like to get the goodies on here.
Good. Yum, yum.
They are. They're good.
Yes.
But I don't know. Are they still friends? I've met Graham Garden the other day.
Yeah, he's quite shy.
He is Graham very Garden. Shy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when he opens up a little bit and he's got lots of interesting
stories. Yeah, he's funny. Yeah. He's funny. Yeah. I don't know if they all still hang out together.
I think him and Tim do.
Go tricycling. Yeah. On the...
Well, I think they sold their bike to those the other guys. Oh God, I'm too ill to remember the name of their group. That's ridiculous.
The Fast Show,
The Trap. That's right,
The Trap.
They're three guys that do a podcast and a sketch show.
Okay.
So they bought the bike. It wasn't worth getting there for. Never mind. Yeah. We'll edit it out. So let's go back to the young Armando Iannucci in Glasgow as a youngster. Yeah. Your dad ran a pizza factory.
Yes.
What's that?
Why are you laughing? What do you mean, what's that?
What's
it's
a
factory that makes pizzas.
You can just
what's
make them
that?
In an oven at the back of the shop.
What's that? It's a pizza factory. What's that? Well, I've just told you it's a pizza factory. Why do you keep saying, what's that?
How many pizzas?
The clothes in the top. Pizza factory.
Well, it's a kitchen, isn't it?
No. This was a production line. I mean, it wasn't like a huge factory, but it had kind of like a kind of...
It had an oven in it. We made up two pizzas a day.
It had a kind of Heath Robinson-like long machine.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the dough would come on at the start, and then the tomato would go on at the tomato base, and then the ingredients would spill onto it, and then it would go under the, you know...
How you make a pizza. That's how,
well, you asked how it worked, you know, I mean... I'm struggling to come up with anything more exotic than the fact it was a factory that made pizzas.
Did you work at the pizza factory in the summer?
In the summer, yes.
What job did you do?
Oh, just...
which bit were you in charge of?
Just packing. I was quite young then. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you've got this, your Italian family living in Scotland.
Yes. Quite a lot of Italians in Glasgow and Edinburgh. It's a big Italian
community.
Well,
Glasgow's got a very big immigrant population of all kinds, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Actually very...
And it was because it used to be a shipbuilding centre, so... And in the olden days, in the pre-internet days, people would travel by ship. So... And So my dad, after the Second World War, he everyone's looking for work, and you go by boat. So his boat got into Glasgow, and there are jobs there.
Was the pizza factory there, and he worked in it, or did he go?
No.
I'm going to build a pizza.
No. He came up with pizza. So that's why a lot of them settled in Glasgow. Why you get a big Italian community in Cardiff as well?
Yeah.
So anywhere where there's been like heavy industry.
So do you feel more Scottish or more Italian, or
I don't know. I mean, it was interesting when we've been through so many referenda, but when the Scottish referendum happened, I lived in London. You know, I didn't want Scotland to vote for independence because I just suddenly thought, I'll feel homeless. I'll feel that's my home. Yeah. I but I don't like the idea of suddenly being a foreigner in England. I know that the other referendums, I'm very confused. Yeah. Just all my layers of identity have just been stripped off. And there is no, you know, small husk of a kind of pure Englishman at the bottom of it, I'm afraid. No. So I'm just, it's just empty. So I don't know. I don't know what I am or where.
And the whole thing was set up just to annoy you. Let's get in Scotland, yeah. Out of Europe.
Yeah. That Liam Fox, he's had it in for me right from the start. Yeah, the prick.
So, well, yeah. We'll talk about politics. Mm-hmm. Tell you what you should do. You should do Think of It About Brexit.
Yeah.
So that's what you should do. You can have that. You can have that, like I gave you Alan Partridge.
How would it work?
Yeah, you can have it. You can have it.
How would it...
I don't get, like, some of the characters from the Think of It, and they're talking about...
What would happen in it?
Well, trying to work out...
What would happen different from what actually happens?
Trying to work out how to leave the EU.
Yeah.
Be good. And then Doctor Who comes in and goes, fuck you off! You fuck off!
That's the first 2 minutes. And then they realise that the ballot paper has got a misprint on it, and it says no and no instead of, and oh my God, and should they let it out, or should they keep it quiet? And then Ollie gets drunk in a pub and admits it, and a reporter publishes it as a story, and soon...
Soon
the press are furious, and Malcolm plants a rumour that are all started by the man who first came up with the word no. So they trace his great-great-great-grandson to a small house in... Perth, not Perth, Australia, Perth in Scotland, which just complicates matters. And so the press are camped outside the small house in Perth saying, why did you fuck up the referendum with your double no ballot paper? Yeah. And the minister says, I think we got away with it, only to discover that she had a microphone on when she said that. And it was broadcast across Times Square and via the International Space Station to Vladimir Putin, who launches a nuclear strike.
That's the first 5 minutes. There you go. It's literally that easy. See, that's why you should do it.
Yeah, it's easy. I've just done it. It's great.
It's good.
It writes itself.
Is it? But it's like, you know, I mean, I know you wouldn't want to go back to that anyway, but do you feel that the world events have overtaken satire to an extent that's impossible?
Just, I don't know what to... I said this the other day, I just can't... I don't find Donald Trump funny. I don't find him funny. I find him appalling. I can only think of appalled things to say about it. There is that stage of... We've gone into this slightly fictional world, really. There's no need to have things like Think of It and so on. Because what's on the telly and the news feels fictional. I mean, like you said at the start, you know, and I berate you for this, saying I'm tempted to vote for him just to see what happens. I think that's what a lot of people do.
Maybe.
Because they're so pissed off and they're so, you know, we haven't been listened to. Let's just vote for it and see what happens.
Isn't that what's happening with all the elections? It's people saying, I don't like what's going on, so I'm going to give you a bloody nose by voting for this guy who's the exact opposite of what you're
doing. Who's good.
So, I mean, Trump has somehow managed to make himself identify as being some kind of outsider,
some outsider
billionaire outsider.
Like Bruce
week,
Wayne.
Yeah, even this week after his appalling kind of
Bruce Wayne in a Donald Trump suit that can misogynize someone from 50 yards.
Even after his appalling appearance in this debate, he's still at 45% of the people.
It is extraordinary.
I mean, that's just terrifying.
What's more terrifying is, like, not so much watching it. I do watch the debate. I thought it would be awful to watch, and it was kind of mesmerising about how awful it is, you know. It's like watching a horror movie where you keep watching.
Yeah.
But read the transcript. Read the word-for-word transcript, because that is bleak, because it's just random words. The sentences that go on, you know, through centuries and just don't reach any... It's, you know, and every now and then you know, there's a great wadge of stuff from him. You know, I got to tell you, we, the computers, cyber, China, we've got to, I tell you, she didn't do it. She didn't do it. I'm the one, because I got to tell, and believe me, we've got to, you know, and there's that for like half an hour, right? And then you just read Hillary Clinton, did you just hear that? I tell you, you know, yeah. That goes back to, yeah. She didn't, you know, I got, you know.
It was his microphone, though.
So oh, it's his
the
microphone.
Same, it's the same for me. I sound really croaky in this, because George, our sound guy, is not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, he was saying how Hillary Clinton's going to get the vote of every sound guy now.
And there are a lot of them in America. Said, yeah. Was it that the sound was blocking out every other word?
It could be.
Which is why it sounded so incoherent. Oh,
no, my product placement's fallen over.
Okay. Do you have to actually do an advert then?
We'll talk about it in a bit.
Okay.
It's not really an advert. I'm going to discuss it with you, and you can say what you think about it.
That's
an advert.
Okay.
You can say, this is shit, if you want.
Okay.
And then the man who's in the audience who brought the stuff along, going, oh, I paid $300.
There's a very good... there's a very good American podcast, political podcast, called 538, which is Nate Silver and his... you know, wonks who look at the polls and try and work out how the race is going. But they have to read out an advert in the middle of it, right. And it's for pants. It's for underpants. But it's a serious advert. But it's not like they've got someone in to do the voiceover. They can't afford a kind of...
No.
So they have to do it themselves.
Yeah.
So they do a kind of... So where do you think... Do you see in Pennsylvania the swing? There's the under 30 voters who are not coming out for Hillary Clinton. And yet you've got the white, uneducated male, blue-collar workers who are very demonstrative of their support for Trump. In a minute. But first, have you ever considered your underpants? You want to feel comfortable. You want to feel warm when it is cool. You want to feel a little bit more enclosed when it's a little bit breezy. Well, we said, you know...
Yeah. And then they're not even allowed to make hang-to-the-left jokes.
No. And you can just hear in the background all the other policy experts just going...
Well, that's partly why I've always resisted it before, but hopefully the things we've chosen to be, you know...
Smartly, appropriate.
Well, not appropriate, but just...
Inappropriate.
Well, just weird, hopefully, so we'll see how it goes. And I wanted to talk... I didn't know about this, but I was fascinated talking to Graham Linnan about something similar, that with the thick of it, there was an American Pilot before Veep, which obviously is a sort of extension of the thick of it, or another way of looking at it. But there was an actual American attempt at the thick
pilot,
of it.
Yes.
With Oliver Platt.
Oliver Platt was Malcolm Tucker,
right?
and Ollie was turned to a girl, and Christopher Guest directed it.
Yeah,
and Mitch Hurwitz, who did Arrested Development,
yeah,
showrun it. So what could possibly go wrong? And it was tedious. What happened was it got sold to ABC, who are one of the big mainstream networks, but owned by Disney. So there was no swearing. It was all conventional. I do like how you just laugh right from the word go.
Yeah. So how could you do the thing without swearing?
I know. And I was. This was my first taste of America, actually. Yeah. My first trip to LA, and I was flown over. We're so excited to see you. Sony were making it. I was shown around Sony. I sat in the house that Gone with the Wind features in Gone with the Wind, which is a set of offices there.
Right.
So it's not very exciting. And I got a lot of what someone later told me is called depressed hyperbole, which is what you get in meetings in Los Angeles, which is depressed hyperbole, which is you go into a meeting and there's someone by a big desk who just goes, "We're so thrilled to have you over. It's such an honor to meet you. We're just big fans of your work." And you realize that's the fourth, you're the fourth person that they've had that meeting. And so I thought, oh, it's all very exciting and good to have me. And then I didn't hear anything from them again. And they went and made the thing without my involvement. And then...
So, I mean, that happened with Graham. So I can't understand how that is even allowed to happen.
No, I don't think it would now. I don't think it would. I think it happened at a time when, and this was a BBC thing, they were just so excited to be speaking to someone in America that they sold it for a pound. I think they sold it for some beads and some a shell. I got given a shell saying, this is your cut of what we've We've sold America the thick of it for this, and a potato and stuff. I don't think that happens now, but that's what happened at the time. But it was interesting because it was my... I learned from it, and I actually put it into In the Loop, which was the thick of it movie, where all the British politicians go over to America and think they're going to have some kind of say in the war, and then realise they've been utterly shafted and then ignored. And that was really based on my trip to LA.
It's sort of weird, especially with your stuff, because I think your stuff so much depends on you and you being, like, in the way the old days it used to work, they'd go, hey, here's the money, go and make what you want to make and let's see what it is.
Yeah.
It seems to be what you've done from the start. You've gone off and done your own thing.
But it came good in the end because in amongst those initial conversations, I spoke to HBO, then went and did In the Loop, and then HBO got in touch, heard that Thick of It wasn't happening in America. Yeah. And, I mean, for In the Loop, we had to get a letter from Sony saying we could make a film with Malcolm Tucker in it.
Right.
Because the BBC had sold them, like, the character, you know, I mean, just, you know, for a little bag of tobacco. Who still sits on the director general's desk, you know, the little bag of tobacco from Sony. and HBO said, look, you know, we want to do a show about Washington.
Yeah.
We saw it in the Loop. We like the thick of it. But they very much were like the BBC were, HBO. They very much would get the people in and then we just let them get on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when we made Veep. So. Yeah. So it sort of came good in the end.
Yeah. It's weird, though, isn't it? It's weird that these incredibly intelligent people who worked on massive hits kind of don't get how that...
But there's a lot of that, though, isn't there? I think it's the sheer numbers involved as well, because there are so many people there, and they're all called vice presidents, so vice president programming, vice president, you know, scheduling and commissioning, development, all that, and they all have to justify their job, really. And I don't think they have much to do, because when you're making a show, you're busy, but when you're going, let's have a show about politics. That you're not really busy. That's just that one sentence. And then you invite everyone to do it. Then the next thing is you've got to invite everyone who's done anything about politics to a meeting, because you don't want to be fired if your boss says, have you had that guy in for a meeting? So you have to have everyone in for a meeting, which is why you end up having the meetings with this tone of, we're so excited, because you're just, you know, you're the 101 person that they're seeing. So there's a lot of that going on. But the interesting thing I found about HBO is they're tiny, they're small.
Yeah.
I only had to deal with one person, really. They're a very small outfit.
Yeah. Was it an ambition of yours to go to America?
I don't think it was an ambition. No, I've always been fascinated by American comedy and American politics. And I've always admired, you know, stuff that HBO does and also AMC. So it was great that they... you know, made the approach, and I thought this is really exciting. But I think it was the project and the people involved in it that was the.
And were you out? You were out with Veep for 4 years or 5 years?
It was probably on the whole 5 years, because we do a pilot first and get that going, and then you come back, and then.
And you were coming back and forth.
I was. So, that was a crazy thing. I was commuting. I was commuting. Not all year. We they were really good, actually, because it was all the Thick of It writers, all the Thick of It directors, and we edited it in London. We wrote it in London. The cast came out to London to rehearse it, but in the end we'd shoot it in Columbia, which is halfway between Baltimore and Washington, so it was on the East Coast, which was better than the West Coast because it's just easier to fly to, but also it allows you to go into Washington to shoot sort of exteriors and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's 5 hours time difference and it is flying, and I try to do like 2 weeks out there, 1 week back. And after about 3 years of it, I could tell that I was just a zombie, you know, not just out there, but at home as well. So that's when I decided to, after the fourth season, that I would stop.
Yeah. So you've sort of walked away from it completely.
I mean, they asked, do you want to stay on? And I thought, you know, if a new guy's taking over, they ought to take over, you know, everyone needs to know who's in charge, because that's the other thing. If there are too many people around, I think that's where the problems with these other shows happen, is there's too many people sort of in charge, so no one quite knows who the ultimate person is in charge, and therefore decisions get fudged and so on. So I thought it was important that Dave Mandel, who took over as showrunner, was in charge and felt he was in charge, and the cast felt he was in charge, and the writers felt in charge, you know.
It's an amazing idea that no one... It's amazing that no one had that idea before for Veep. It sort of seems like...
Well, set in the vice president.
Well, just, a sitcom set around the vice president. I suppose in the West Wing, they kind of had the vice president as a character.
As a little, but not very much.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It seems the most obvious.
The pilot of the West Wing was really meant to be about... what's his name? Not Josh, not CJ, not... what's his name?
Sam Seaborn,
thank you.
Yeah.
Sam. It was really meant to be about him, Sam Seaborn, who was like the deputy speechwriter.
Yeah.
And Martin Sheen just sort of bobbed in and out in the background. But of course, everyone watched it and go, well, I want to know more about him. That guy over there, he's in charge. I want to know more about... So then it became about the president.
Yeah. You know?
And I suppose we were looking for a comic... idea behind it. So the idea, and I read this amazing book, Robert Caro has written this huge biography of Lyndon Johnson, and it's an extraordinary book. I mean, he's now written, it's like 4,000 pages, and Johnson has just become president. So we've still got Vietnam to go through, you know. But anyway, he's still writing the next volume now. But it is an amazing... it's a gripping account of someone who's very, very, you know, from day one wants to be president, is trying to work out how to be president, and, you know, rises up, becomes a congressman, becomes a senator, becomes chief majority leader in the Senate, gets enormous reform enacted, becomes the most powerful figure after the president.
Yeah.
And then John F. Kennedy becomes president. So he thinks, what do I do now? I'll become vice president. Because on balance, one in four vice presidents become president.
Right. Okay.
That was his. That's the math he did, and it worked out. And so I thought that's really
good. Yeah, it did.
And it worked. It worked out. You know, Kennedy is like swings and roundabouts. Really, you know, it's sort of, you know, you win some, you lose some, and.
In a way, it was lucky he wasn't president, wasn't it, the first time? In a way.
Yeah.
You thought, oh, that was a shame. Oh, no, it worked out quite well.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
not
worked out.
President
yeah.
that time.
So, kids, if you want to make it in life, latch yourself onto someone who's going to be killed. No, but what was interesting about that was there was a powerful figure because he just ran the Senate. Suddenly, when he was vice president, reduced to being this guy who they sometimes forgot to invite to meetings, who was literally drumming his fingers, you know, waiting for staff, waiting for the president to ring up, and you know, emasculated. And yet, people were still had to reserve a little bit of respect for him because you never know.
Yeah.
And in fact...
yeah.
So, and we talked to, when we were researching, we talked to a guy who was chief of staff for Joe Biden and previously for Al Gore, and he said, yeah, it's that thing of America's all about winning, about coming number one, and yet if you're vice president, you're more or less going around with a badge saying number two all the time, and it can be demeaning. And you sort of, he said, you know, when you come into a room, people will laugh at you about you as you leave, but not in front of you, because one day you might be president, you know. So there's that kind of... And I thought that's quite a funny...
Yeah, no, definitely.
Especially if we make her a former senator and she was once powerful and, you know, she's not a complete idiot. You know, she has been elected and she has been successful, but suddenly she's got nothing to do. And yet there's that ambition and the big things are happening next door and how can I get next door? So that was the starting point for it.
Yeah, I mean, but I suppose what's interesting about it is there's that perfect scenario there and yet no one had thought to do it. It's kind of encouraging as a comedy writer to go, oh, there are, because there's so many people trying to think up the perfect sitcom or the perfect situation.
I think that's
such a good, you know, it's such a...
I think after Dick Cheney, it no longer became a joke, a kind of... bog standard joke, the vice president. You know, they could be powerful and they could be influential.
Yeah.
And maybe that was then why it felt like a good place to set it, really.
Ooh, how interesting. I'm going to see that. Not many interviewers do that, do they?
Is it
sarcastic? It was interesting.
It could be a new section in the new series. There should always be a very interesting
moment. Very interesting.
Where you stroke your chin. And there's just a little slight awkward pause.
Well, that's why I have emergency questions now, Amanda. I foolishly, for one of the Kickstarter awards, said I'd do a book of 500 emergency questions. I thought that'd be easy to do. Right. I've started writing it. I've written all the ones down in this book and about three more. Uh-huh. And there's 103 so far.
Okay.
It's quite hard to, and then I've got to come up with loads more for individuals. Yeah. I'm an idiot. But here's some of my new ones. If you were granted the powers of a King Midas, but yeah. could choose what everything was going to turn into, what would everything turn into in Armando Iannucci's King Midas world?
I think either carrot.
Yeah, carrot.
Carrot. Because carrot's useful. I like carrot. Raw carrot, not cooked carrot. Okay. Carrot is useful.
Well, also, if it's raw, you can cook it.
You can.
And cook if it's cooked, you can't make it raw.
I know.
Yeah.
You should get the Nobel Prize for physics. And chemistry.
Yep.
Yeah. So carrot or... trifle. It has to be trifle. Yeah, not chocolate. Trifle.
You know, but then everything would turn into it, and all you'd touch your wife, and she'd turn.
But that's
into
the essential Midas problem.
It is a problem.
You know,
you're never going to come up with a solution.
You're never going to get around that.
Everything I would touch would turn into what it was, but holding some diamonds that they would then give to me.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what King Midas should have got.
Yeah.
Have you ever killed someone but never spoken about it? And would you like to speak about it now? Yeah.
Yes and no.
If you have killed, don't talk about it. That's yeah. Well done, Armando. You didn't fall into my trap.
He had a slightly, I don't know, it was a slightly forgiving look on his face.
Yeah.
As the final shard of glass
given away too much
went in his eye.
The police can work that out.
This guy from Eggheads, right?
Yeah. CJ from Eggheads.
CJ from Eggheads.
Not his real name.
No. Isn't he meant to be clever?
Well, I mean, out of all the Eggheads. Eggheads is quite an easy quiz because they give you all the answers.
Well, that's rubbish.
You get a multiple choice, and any decent quizzer can work out.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be a good quiz if there were no choices. Mm-hmm. But he's pretty bad at it still.
Okay.
He's usually it's him at the back when it's the final round.
Right.
It's usually him sitting behind going. We're going to take out CJ from Egg. What's the point? You let him stay in there. Am I right? I'm thinking people, a lot of CJ fans, since he's murdered someone, you like him, man. I used to joke about him, go, yeah, he's an idiot. Now he's dangerous, Rich. He could
have you ever, push you in a have you ever killed anyone?
No, well, apart from possibly this little girl that
okay.
I mentioned
yeah,
before
yeah, yeah.
That I dreamt about. I had a dream last night that I was, at the time, that I was in the 12 Disciples. And
which one were you?
I can't remember which one I was, but then Jesus was talking and we couldn't quite hear him in the back, and I said, this is like in life. It was just when we were meeting him for the first time.
In sort of prison like end of year Christmas shows and talent shows and stuff, do you think the murderer does observational comedy about murder?
They should do. It'd be good. Because to other murderers, it would work.
Yeah, well, to a
crowd like this.
I mean, there would be an audience going, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I know. That's awkward, that bit, isn't it? Yeah.
Here's another one.
Yeah.
Another new one. Do you think the Tim Allen film, The Santa Claus, could ever happen in real life?
I don't think it has happened. No. What happens in the Tim Allen film, Santa Claus?
From memory, Santa Claus gets knocked off a roof and dies.
Uh-huh.
Spoiler alert. And then the real Santa Claus. And then Tim Allen, who's just a bloke with a and he's divorced, but he's trying to get on with his kids, but you know they don't identify with him because he's Tim Allen. free Buzz Lightyear toys as well, I guess, but it doesn't help. And he becomes Father Christmas, slowly turns into Father Christmas, and then becomes Father Christmas, and that's how you, Father Christmas is.
I was talking to someone today.
Yeah,
today. Just not long before we came in, about what happens. There must be someone who still believes there's Father Christmas.
Yeah.
And then has children. and then is fully expecting their child to be given presents by Father Christmas. So I was then shocked on Christmas morning when Father Christmas hasn't come.
And assumes his child's been naughty and punished.
Must be naughty, yeah. That must have happened. Must that have happened?
No.
No? Not even in America? Yeah.
Well, maybe like a 12-year-old has had a child. But I think, you know, once they've gone through whatever that happened, to make that happen, they've probably lost their innocence.
Sure, there's some community somewhere that still believes in Father Christmas all the year round.
Some community? There's a community?
Yeah.
You've raised the stakes from one person to now a community of people who are just saying, definitely he is. I know he hasn't been for 100 years, but he's coming. You have to believe. We're not believing enough.
I'm saying, and I'm not having a go at the Amish community, but, yeah. Like the Amish, dressing up.
Are having a go at the Amish.
I'm not having a go.
I don't believe in Father Christmas.
No, I'm not saying.
I'm saying
there is that community. Yeah. There may well be in some other state in America.
We wouldn't have heard of this Father Christmas.
A community that genuinely believes that Father Christmas exists and they till the fields dressed as elves. I don't know. I mean, I'm just. We don't know. I'm going to go.
Well, I think.
See, if this was Donald Trump, he'd say, We don't know. Could be, possibly. Nobody knows. You know what I mean.
Well, I was thinking.
China.
Because people say about conspiracy theories, in fact, I say this about conspiracy theories, that one of them must be true. You know, the others are, they're out of all the moral and earthly truth.
Yes.
So out of all the childhood stuff,
yes,
one of them must be true. So the Easter Bunny, maybe, or the Tooth Fairy.
Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
Father Christmas.
The
Penny for the Guy.
Yeah. The Harvest.
That's it. There are no more.
The Michaelmas Mouse.
The Special. Yeah.
Because one of them turned out, the Tooth Fairy could be real.
The Pancake Camel.
Someone was telling me they had to tell their 11-year-old child. I was a friend of a friend, so I got it secondhand. But someone said their 11-year-old child still believed in Father Christmas, and they felt, oh, God, we have to tell them. And then they said, yeah, what you said, and they took it quite badly. Went, it's okay. But at least we've still got the Easter Bunny. And then went, oh, no.
That's all made up.
It's a shame, isn't it?
It was a man who rose from the dead.
It's very strange. Very strange. Let's do some product placement, Amanda. Look, this is a perfect man.
What have you got for us this week?
I want to see what people think about this. This is something. I've got to get the actual right name of it because I don't want to get it wrong. Because that's the part of being in the world of advertising.
Yes.
You should know this,
Amanda.
You've
got to get the name right. That's amazing.
This is from spinelessclassics.com. Mm. What this is, Amanda, what do you think about this? This is like a poster, but it's of an entire book. This one is 1984. That is the whole text of 1984 on a poster.
Up on a board. That's handy, Richard.
Yeah. If you've got a magnifying glass, you can read 1984.
When I'm on the train but don't have a copy of the paperback, I can always get out my hard, large card oblong and read it. Causing minimum discomfort to the commuters on either side of me.
I think it's for display purposes, really, but... Yes.
Why would you want to display 1984? What purpose?
To keep warning people about its message.
Okay.
Because you might forget if it's just on a bookshelf, but if it's up there on the wall, go, oh, yeah, we better watch out for totalitarian governments.
Yes.
If everyone had one of these, maybe Donald Trump wouldn't be doing so well. That is my point.
Okay, but although you said all of 1984 is up there on it, it is illegible.
Well, I've got very bad eyesight, so I can't tell. All I know is this bit, these three columns. I mean, it's impossible to believe that a whole book could get on like that, isn't it? But it is. That's the whole thing. Those three columns are that really
boring. That's what they want you to think.
Do you remember the boring bit in the middle? The 1984, there's like a
Winston
trees.
Smith and he's...
Yeah, it's there. And it's three columns worth. Fucking hell. And there's that one is of... see if you can guess what that one is. It's James Bond. And
that
one... Is
James Bond, did you say?
Yeah, James Bond, and that one is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, see?
Oh, wow.
So there you go. So you can get those online. They're very nice. And
No, what? What do you mean you can get those online?
Get them in. There's loads
okay.
of books.
And then do what with them?
Put them on your wall.
Put them on your wall?
You're meant to help me. Don't make the man's in who made that. He's been going for 5 years. He's really nice.
I don't care.
It's spinelessclassics.com. He gave us £300 to make this. You know, that's paid for George, the incompetent Sandman, who's broken his arm.
Oh.
He fell off a bike. He's incompetent even
was
in
he
his...
trying to record?
He was on a Brompton bike. Uh-huh. You know, the ones that fold up.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and it just unfolded.
Did he end up in a little kind of 1 foot square kind of compacted metal and rubber?
He might have done
contraption.
Right. Yeah. Looks good, that, doesn't it? That
no, spinous, it's a good idea. It's a very good
thing.
Idea.
Good.
Yeah, it's very good
he
idea.
Needs like if 10 people buy him, then he's all right. He's made some money. So
yeah, no, I'm not knocking it.
You wanted to be a Catholic priest.
Very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, you wanted to be one very briefly, or you wanted to...
No, very briefly I wanted to be one. Yeah. At school. Yeah. I was at a Jesuit school.
Yeah.
So it was a very Catholic school. And they were very good, actually. They were very sort of free-minded and let us kind of ask lots of... You know, they didn't ram it down our throat. And I suppose I was... I'm so sorry.
They ask politely, will you, take this in your mouth, Armando? The holy body of Jesus.
Yeah. And this. That it's on. but eventually I just thought, this is rubbish. No, I don't.
Good.
There we are.
Would you have been a good Catholic priest?
I don't know. I mean, it was all the poverty, chastity, and obedience thing, yeah. Really. And the poverty's not. I could have. You know, I wasn't. I'm not really into sort of luxuries. It's the chastity and obedience,
yeah.
Really.
That put you off.
Put me off. Yeah. Really. So, and I just thought, you know, once you hit a certain age, you think, no, that's bollocks.
Yeah.
Really. No. Although I do, you know, I do still. I'm still interested in. I do admire people who are. I'm not going to say religious, but who are spiritual, you know, who, you know, are keen to try and come up with a way of life that implies there is something a little bit better than mm-hmm. just us getting through the day.
Yeah.
Really?
There isn't, though, is that?
No, I know, but but it's nice to con them into nice. Thinking that...
There's, like, communities of people who still believe in Catholicism.
Yeah, I know. And Father Christmas.
Yeah, Father Christmas.
In that certain state in America.
Yeah. You have written... Are you writing a thing about artificial intelligence now? Is that your next project?
It's a script. It's a comedy, a movie.
Yeah.
About artificial intelligence. And
is it about having sex with robots? Mainly?
No, there's no sex with robots, no.
Okay.
No. It's really more based on the premise. You know these, if you go on YouTube and you look at robots now, they're rubbish. They are. I mean, they sort of fall over and yeah. can't pick things up, you know. But the premise really is, what if their software was brilliant, so their minds are just, you know, streets ahead of us? But the hardware is still that. And yet they decide now is the time to strike. That's because, you know, the brain is saying, kill all humans. Subjugate them. Not kill them, subjugate them. Subjugate them.
Yeah.
But physically...
They've just gone too soon.
Yeah, they've just gone too soon. They should have waited. Yeah. So that's the premise. So that's written. So I'm the next process of...
And you've just completed another film?
I've just finished a film called The Death of Stalin.
Okay.
Which, rather like The Pizza Factory, yeah. The clue is in the title. Yeah. In that it is...
I haven't got to that bit in history yet, so I'm annoyed you've given away
yeah.
the ending of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 1953, Stalin died.
Okay.
And it's about what happens when he dies and the power struggle going on in the Kremlin yeah. to who takes over. And Steve Buscemi is Khrushchev and... Simon Russell Beale is Lavrenti Beria, who's the villain, the head of all the secret police and the torture and stuff like that. And Michael Palin is Molotov.
Wow.
And Paul Whitehouse is in it, and Andrea Riseborough, and
Brilliant.
When's that Jeffrey Tambor is great. Jeffrey Tambor is Malenkov, who takes over from Stalin.
Right.
And is no good. It's just a rubbish Stalin.
Yeah.
It's all based on true.
It's hard
true
to follow Stalin, though, isn't it?
Very difficult act to follow.
Yeah.
He is the Morecambe and Wise of single dictators.
Often with dictators, you don't get to follow them because they fuck up and that's the end. Like, so there's no one had to really follow Hitler in a...
No. No,
there was the guy, wasn't there, for a couple of weeks who took over.
We
don't really remember him.
And the interesting thing is, you know, Stalin was, responsible for millions of deaths, you know, maybe as many as Hitler, and yet somehow he's kind of got away with it in that you can joke about Stalin or that whole, the whole language around that time. You can say to someone, ah, come on, comrade, stupid, you know, but you can't say to someone, ah, you Nazi. It's just... You know, that scene is like toxic, and yet Stalin somehow is seen as fortunately, as the subject of a light-hearted look at the events. So that we shot that in the summer, and I'm in the middle of editing that now.
Cool. Yeah. And when will that be out? 2017?
Yes. I think the idea is to May, June, something like that, next year.
That's good. And there was another thing that I wanted to talk to you about.
What might that be?
Don't know. I'm surprised I've got through this far, to be honest. I'll talk about something else. It wasn't there. Oh, we both wrote for Up to Something. Our comedy paths have crossed about three times.
Yeah, that rings a bell.
There was the Shane Ritchie, David Schneider, Mike Haley vehicle.
Yes,
from 1990, I'd say.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about working on that?
No. I don't think I actually wrote for it. I think David... Nick asked if I could have one of my...
He did the same to me, Nick, one of my jokes.
Yeah.
And then said, and gave me 50 quid.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, that's all right.
Very good.
Anyone remember Up to Something?
Nope.
Shane Ritchie? Remember, it might come up on Pointless.
Yeah. What else is in your book?
Well, there's all sorts of things. Your dad owned a pizza factory.
Yeah.
Other, you at 14, you went to the library to read Hansard.
Yes.
Yeah. You were quite a nerdy child.
I'm very nerdy. I know. I was very nerdy. Very uncool. Very, you know, not into, like, fashion or nothing like that. And I sort of resented it. I think that's part of why I wanted to go into comedy. I hated the way that, you know, society could bully you into wearing a certain type of clothes or listening to certain type of music, and I just didn't like that.
Yeah.
So I kind of just thought I just want to do my own.
Yeah.
And I still hate labels. You know, I hate the idea of people being labelled as such. Apart from idiots who believe in Father Christmas,
or I think
people who support Donald Trump.
Yeah. I'm sure it's true of a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
I mean, that comedians are quite nerdy, but also that kind of, because that sort of thing bothered me.
But do you not
me.
Think there's a the thing that I loathe now is that comedians are now cool, aren't they?
Yes,
there's a kind of old generation of sort of trendy, kind of cool comedians.
And I resent it.
Yeah,
because it's not that was not us. Are
that,
they?
That wasn't we, that wasn't in our world. No. We weren't offered that choice.
No, we were uncool, and that's how we got out of it.
Yeah.
We did comedy.
Yeah,
you can't
be
cool through comedy. It's true. It does annoy me.
Yeah, we should kill them.
We should. what was your favourite bit of Hansard that you would? So Hansard's the right, just
it's,
what's
it's
happened
the
in Parliament.
Of what happened in the House of Commons. It was
it's turned out to be good for you in the end.
But it was before there were cameras, television cameras in the House of Commons, and I was just interested in certain debates, like when the government fell on a vote of no confidence, and Margaret Thatcher laid into James Cameron. I just was quite interested to read what actually happened in it, really.
Did you have posters of Malcolm Rifkind on your wall and that kind of
thing? No, I didn't. No.
I got to look round Cecil Parkinson's house a week before he died.
Have the police spoken to you about this?
I saw Cecil Parkinson on New Year, and he died in January, didn't he?
Right.
Because I'm looking for a house, I went and looked around his house.
Oh, I see.
He was by surprise. I walked in.
And there he was.
This man came up to me and said, "Hello, I'm Cecil Parkinson." And I looked up and said, "Oh, yeah, you are. He's quite nice." He was quite an avuncular figure. He told me that the well in the village that he lived in times of pestilence, you're allowed to draw one bucket of water out of that well. So I thought, oh, I'll buy a house then. I didn't buy it. Was weird. My wife didn't realise who he was. And didn't really know who he was. He's quite... Do you know who Cecil Parkinson is? I mean, he was a very evil... Basically, the most sort of evil politician. He was a very unpleasant man.
Well, he sort of... he has an affair with his secretary.
Yeah.
Is that right? And then... And they had a child. And then he... I don't even know to this day whether he imposed an order on, so it became illegal even to mention this child.
Yeah, she wasn't allowed to be in school photos at all. So
yeah, and which is why I'm saying I'm not even sure whether what we're doing now
is allowed.
Is allowed.
He's dead now. Fuck him.
I mean, it's an interesting constitutional. It is. Minefield.
Our producer can sort it out. He can just put in the beeps again of the Prince Andrew beeps. Yeah, I don't know if you know about Prince Andrew. What he does.
All true, apparently.
It is all true. It is all true. Yeah. But yeah, it was very. So we were looking around this house. There's like quite a lot of paintings and busts of him. And also there was all the up one staircase, there was all the Labour isn't working publicity. And there was a Christmas card from the Camerons on the mantelpiece, and my wife was slowly kind of looking around going, what the fuck is it?
I once found myself going around Geoffrey Archer's house.
Oh really?
He bought who's that poet who got killed in the First World War? Rupert Brooke's house in Grantchester. Is it just outside Cambridge? Is it Grantchester?
That's made up, isn't it? That's from The Archers, isn't it? Is it from Thomas Hardy or something? It's
I don't know. Anyway, Rupert Brooke's house outside Cambridge. And I was invited to a thing that was nothing to do with Geoffrey Archer. It was just it was a charity thing, but it was his wife was hosting the event, so it was at their house. So he was around. And you got to wander around his house, and the bathroom downstairs is just—it's a bizarre. It's just full of front pages of magazines about Geoffrey Archer, including the scandals.
Yeah, was there a brown paper bag full of money behind this toilet system?
But there was just there was like, look at all the things that we've done, including the scandals, just like paraded for you on the wall. I remember, and there was a. There was a little bridge going over a pond full of fish.
Right.
And a little girl who we knew came over to us and said, oh, that man over there, he's very odd. And I said, oh, well, that's Geoffrey Archer. Why? And she said, oh, because I said I like the fish. And he said, oh, do you like these fish? Each one of these carp represents a West End musical I put money into. I said, don't go back. Don't speak to him. Step away. We'll find your parents. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
That's blood, brothers.
Does he have to, if the carp dies, does he then replace it with another carp and have to remember which carp is which?
No, the musical is just closed for a day. That's the lights go out on London's West End.
The mousetrap carp is still alive. That's why they can't get rid of the mousetrap.
Yeah.
It's interesting seeing that. He was horrible, though, Cecil Parkinson.
Yeah.
Well, he never saw his... She was brain damaged and mentally...
Oh, yeah, no, he completely...
Definitely true.
Yeah. That's definitely true.
I couldn't afford his house, but it was nice to look around.
Yeah.
So, do you think there's a lot of people... I think there's a lot... I'm trying to sell my house at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people just come round just to, like...
To see Richard Herring's house.
No, I think, that's why I went round to a celebrity chef who I can never remember the name of's house, who's quite famous on telly. And the woman, the estate agent was all like, oh, I think you're going to recognise this guy. I was going, excuse me, I am me. I'm not going to be impressed. You should be impressed that you're showing me round his house. But she didn't recognise me from these podcasts for some reason. I think a lot of people, I've had three or four people come around who come around three or four times and then just go away. And I think they just like to make you think they're going to buy your house.
Okay.
Because they get because of the power of it. Don't you think so? Have you ever experienced that? Like, just still, there's a woman who came round three times, like twice, and you think, oh, good, we're going to get an offer. Mm. And then just nothing happened. Mm. And then we talked to another sage, and he said, is it Mrs. Clements or whatever her name was? He said, yeah. And he said, oh, yeah, she came round one of my houses seven times. Seven times.
She also probably goes to lots of funerals and like that. You know, just.
Anyway, it's fun having a house, isn't it? it's not nice having a house, isn't it? In 2010, you voted for the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah.
How did that work out?
In 2011, I regretted my...
Who are you going to vote for now, now there's nothing in the centre?
I don't know. I mean, that is the problem. I'm confused.
Yeah.
I'm confused. I don't know.
It's hard, isn't it?
It won't be for Theresa May, but it's will come as no surprise that I tend to be a bit, woolly liberal, left of centre, whatever. Yeah. So I gravitate between Labour and Lib Dem. I don't know, no idea. That's the depressing thing, in that politics are sort of fragmented so much. There are three Labour parties now, and There's actually four Conservative parties. There's the hard Brexiters and soft Brexiters and Remainers and Osborne. You know, it's so confusing. I can see why the number of people who vote in an election has been going down and down for the last 25 years because it's so uninviting, so unappetizing, really.
Yeah.
And why a lot of people feel actually maybe... I don't agree, but I can see why a lot of people think, forget it. Let's not vote. Let's try and achieve change through some other means.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of... Do you think it needs to be a new... I mean, it feels to me there's a lot of people in the centre, both sides of the centre, who aren't being represented
Without being a kind of... But I'm going to sound it... A very dry... electoral reformer. I do think, fundamentally, the problem is we have an electoral system that only works if there are two big... strong, highly popular parties.
Yeah.
And we don't have those now. We've got each party that's not so strong, and the system doesn't work anymore. So you now get, for example, you get a Conservative Party who's elected on, 36% of the vote? That's not very much.
No.
And yet have a majority. Not a big majority, but a majority.
Yeah.
Once you have a majority, you have absolute power. So you give someone absolute power, even though they're only elected by 36% of the population. In the 1950s, Labour and Conservative, used to get 47-48% of the vote. So therefore, it kind of made sense to have that system. But if you don't have that system now, you can. And therefore, if 36% of the population vote for the government, it does mean that there's, what's the maths now? There's 64% of people who didn't.
Yeah.
So the majority didn't, which is why you get this increasing level of frustration and disappointment and anger, and nobody quite knows where to direct it. So that's the problem.
Do you think you should stand for government?
No, I'd be terrible. I'd be dreadful because I'm so used to, and it may partially as a result of what I've done in terms of the work I do, you see so many sides to it that I couldn't do that. If I was on Newsnight and somebody said, what do you think of this? I'd have to do, on the one hand, this, but I can see their point too, and you mustn't get, so I'd buckle under that.
Yeah, isn't that a good thing? I mean, I sort of feel like everyone, it's sort of become that if you are consistent, that is an admirable thing.
Yeah,
but as I think the consistent people are the ones who fuck everything up, aren't they?
Aren't the people
who are prepared to weigh up both sides and change their mind?
I think decisiveness is overrated. Yeah. I really do, because I think people who just go, yeah, let's do that. You think, oh, great, they're decisive, but no, they may have just rushed into a decision that is actually bad.
Yeah.
And that was a lot through the 80s. You got people, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, I don't agree with her. But she knows what she thinks. She knows what she thinks, And yes, but you don't agree with her. And you see the Trump thing, he just says it like it is. He just says it like it is. Well, yes, but have you heard what he says? And it's that.
But if Trump doesn't win...
Yeah, then, I don't think he will win.
But then someone else will next time. I mean, it's sort of like they've realised that the genie's out of the bottle, isn't it? That we don't, the facts are no longer
and that's important. The problem, that's the problem in America now as well, which is, you know, that system only works if it's two big, fairly cohesive parties. But it's not. The Republicans are split and the Democrats are split. So, which is why you get the extremists on the right and you get the Bernie Sanders sort of movement supporters who are looking for an alternative. Because the system is bust. You know, and that's what's happening all over. And the whole Brexit thing is the country sort of articulating that frustration, really. Yeah. You know, one way or the other.
Yeah. Shall we get rid of democracy?
No, that has its own problems.
Okay.
As you'll see in my movie, yeah. The Death of Stalin, coming out in the cinemas.
Is that only the problem that Stalin wasn't immortal? That's the only... If he lived forever, it would
be... I mean, they tried to keep him... they tried to preserve his body.
Right.
You know, like Lenin. And do you know there's... Because we spoke to the people who are in charge of the preserving.
Right.
And there's little electronic... There's little motors inside... pumping it and also fanning it and keeping the temperature right. It's full of electronics. And
inside Lenin? Or inside
Lenin, in Lenin.
No, happened to Stalin is Stalin they re-rotted.
They just pickled him and shoved him out the back. I think he's making a bit of a resurgence, actually. It's interesting, in Moscow...
He's not coming back, though, is he?
As a robot. In Moscow, because Putin now is very much into... If you go around Moscow... There are statues. You can see portraits of Stalin around, and statues of Tsar Nicholas II. So it's like, it's almost like he said, I don't care which spectrum they're from.
Yeah.
If they're authority figures, I want them up there. I want people to get to like authority figures. I just want that idea to sort of seep into their consciousness.
Right.
Authority figures.
Yeah, because the royal family are like saints now to the Russian people.
And the Russian Orthodox Church is very big, and Putin has allied himself with a sort of sect within the Russian Orthodox Church who believe that Moscow is the third Rome.
Right.
You know, Rome moved to Constantinople and then it's moved up to Moscow. And that, and so, you know, not funny, but...
We're allowed to be educational and interesting.
Yeah.
The thing I was going to ask you about was about another idea you had about internet billionaires. That was another, the kids become young people making lots of money on the internet. You're going to do a sitcom about that?
Yeah, I did. When we wrote Veep, we also wrote a thing about Silicon Valley for HBO. And they said, can we put it to one side at the moment? Because we don't really think the time is quite right for a Silicon Valley sitcom.
Right.
And then 2 years later, I think they were just too polite to say, oh, we've already got one.
Right.
So that was that idea. Right. So I thought, well, no, Silicon Valley. And it's very funny. There's no point in me doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, you were almost trampled by a hippopotamus.
Yeah.
Can't believe I forgot about that.
Can't believe that you've left that to near the end.
Yeah, well, so I thought I'd save the... You almost drowned in Mauritius.
Yes. Yes. I tend to nearly die on holiday. Yeah.
You've got to be careful. It's when you're relaxing.
So I was... we were in the Kruger Park in South Africa and we were on a nighttime safari. So you go out at night and it's an open-top jeep and you shine torches into the trees.
Yeah.
And you see the little eyes of, you know, bush babies and, you know, most animals run away from the light, apart from hippos, who are bastards. And if they see light, they go, what the fuck are you doing? And they charge at you, especially if you've come between them and the water, which we had.
Right.
And the driver he was a big guy, but he immediately, you know, put the thing on and sped off as fast as he could. We got away from it. But he was, like, shaking at the end of it. He said, I've always wondered what would happen if I saw a hippo at night. And Rachel and I, my wife and I, we just thought, God, if we died, what would the funeral be like? Because people would be upset, but on the other hand, we were trampled to death by a hippo.
Yeah.
And that would be... And I think there's a Graham Greene short story about a guy... whose father got killed by a pig falling on him.
Right.
And he's never quite come to terms with the fact that people don't take his father's death seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, that's the thing. I worry about dying in an embarrassing way.
Yeah. What's your favourite embarrassing way to die?
Well, there's loads of ways. I nearly choked to death on an apricot stone.
Okay.
When I was eating an apricot and I just ate the stone by mistake, yeah, on my own, and just thought that's. I was stupid. As it was happening, I thought I was going to die, no, and I was just thinking, oh, what stupid, pointless way. So that, and that's not even, that an accident where a hippo attacks you, at least that's not your fault.
No.
And what happened when you were you nearly drowned?
Drowning. So this was Mauritius. They advertised this thing, you can walk on the seabed. I thought, I'll do that. I'd done a little bit of sort of scuba diving before. And what this is, but it's actually, you go out on this boat, and it looked really like Jules Verne. It was like a glass helmet they, right, they put on you, and they put weights, lead weights on your belt and your shoes, yeah, and you sink to the sea. It's not that deep, but you are completely submerged.
You're underwater.
And there's a tube going from the glass helmet up to the boat, sort of pumping in the air. And the idea is on the seabed, there's lots of, it's coral, and there's lots of beautiful fish, and you can hold out some food and they all come to you. Except my glass helmet was filling up with water. And therefore, I had less and less oxygen.
Yeah.
And therefore, I went into that kind of drowning state where I was going, oh, I'm drowning, but oh, I can't be bothered. Oh, just somebody sort of... And there was another diver out there who saw it, and just, you could see his eyes dart open, and he turned a valve, and the air came in, and the water started going down. And the thing was, I came back afterwards, and Rachel said, so how did you get on? And I said, well, I nearly died. And I was thinking, why aren't you upset? And she was saying, because you didn't. You clearly didn't. You might have nearly died, but you didn't. So that's why I'm not upset. So, yes. So stupid comedy deaths, I nearly...
Do you ever worry that you might have died, and it's like in Sixth Sense, and you're...
And you are...
Well, I could be dead as well, or I could be just doing a practice interview to an empty chair, and you're sitting there and answering.
Well, I mean, I was told when I came here that this interview will go on for 20 years,
It might do. It's been lovely to talk to you. I think we might have to wrap it. Let me just check there's nothing else I wanted to ask you. Just talk amongst yourself for a minute. I think we covered it all. That's good. Oh, you abseiled off the John Radcliffe Hospital in Oxford.
That's right, yeah.
Did you nearly die doing that?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
That's quite dangerous, abseiling.
It was. It's not really.
It fall off. At least you're in a hospital if you're.
Yeah. That was raising money to stop people dying.
Was it? That's nice of you.
Yeah. And when it worked, now nobody dies.
Are you able to pinpoint any people who are still alive because of you abseiling down that thing?
Well, not you. You're dead.
I might be dead. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And you're just talking to yourself and it doesn't make sense.
No, all the people who haven't died as a result of that do have to just pay me 10% of the...
Yeah.
A tithe every year. Yeah.
I think it'd be nice if you know you've literally saved someone's life to just ring them up every now and go, remember? Remember the old abseil I did?
Yeah.
I just wanted to remind you of it.
Just remind you. Just every year for the rest of your life. That's all I'm asking. Just give me some of your money.
10%.
That's all.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want something to happen to you. Like them suddenly forget the cure to that disease. Hey?
Well, it's been lovely. Thank you for
Mr. Iannucci to you.
Thank you for coming back on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Before. It's been lovely to talk to you. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for Armando Iannucci.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Armando Iannucci. Listening to Richard Herring's That's the Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Armando Iannucci. The music is, as always, by Pess. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, everyone at the British Comedy Guide, everyone at iTunes. Why not? Let's thank them. Why not? And everyone at Go Faster Strike for all their help in making this. This is produced by Ben Walker, though today these credits have been produced by George, the incompetent one-armed sound man who has broken one of his arms through wanking, as I'm sure I will have already said. It is a Go Faster Strike, Sky Potato and Fuzz production, and that is all I have to say. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed that. If you want to see more, then go to gofasterstripe.com/badges. Come and see us at Leicester Square Theatre, leicestersquaretheatre.com. Hey, why not go to spinelessclassics.com and buy a whole book on a sheet? That would be nice. And come see me on tour, richchang.com/gigs. Thanks a lot for listening. See you next time. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.